Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Having trouble getting things done at work? You're not alone. Maybe in order to unlock amazing outcomes, it's time to stop looking up and down for answers and instead start looking across. What do we mean by that? The companies with the fastest speed to market tend to be the ones that look across the organization rather than up and down the hierarchy. Stay tuned to hear how Atlassian software like Confluence, Jira, and Loom can help maximize effective teamwork in your organization. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Support for Pivot comes from ServiceNow. By now, you've probably heard about AI. You might even be sick of hearing about it. But despite all the hype, it's not always clear how AI can help your business. ServiceNow has some ideas. With their intelligent platform, they can put AI to work across your company, improving customer experiences, helping non-coders code, accelerating your IT team's productivity, and resolving HR cases faster. So work can actually work better for everyone. So stop the hype and start putting AI to work. Go to servicenow.com/genAI to see why the world works with ServiceNow.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And Kara, after signing a contract for 4 years with Vox, I've decided that I'm just not comfortable with the environmental impact that the Vox Media Podcast Network is having. I'm having second thoughts.
Oh, you. Listen,
I heard that we have to mine Preet Bharara's insights and that he's consuming more electricity than Argentina. And after pumping this shit and doing everything I could to garner my own economic gains, I've decided I'm no longer comfortable with the environmental impact of Vox.
What Scott is referring to is Elon, and we will discuss that later, but he's just decided that that they will no longer be accepting Bitcoin after he accepted Bitcoin because of the
mine. And he also happened to sell a bunch of it right before his earnings call, right?
He got woke.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Oh, all right. We're going to get into
what
your allegations.
But
Preet Bharara does consume more energy than the entire country of Argentina. Let's establish that situation. I wonder if we should do an energy profile on you, Scott Galloway. That would be.
Have you seen me right now?
Yeah,
I look like.
You're sweating.
I look like.
That's what I'm saying.
My gosh.
People don't see it. He was working
like
out before this.
Fukushima right now, in a good way.
Yeah, it's hot there in Florida, huh?
I'm sweating.
It's a hot.
I'm sweating.
You live in a place that's warm. That's a warm place. It's a beautiful day here. It's 72 degrees here in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you're having your 11 days of spring before it comes 95.
You know what? It has. It's freezing. It's been freezing this week.
Really?
It's been freezing. I've had Maggie Haberman staying at my house. We'd had to turn on the heat.
Really?
She's working on a Trump book, but she's...
Maggie Haberman staying in my place.
She's my friend.
She is your friend.
And all you people who want to tweet me about her...
She's smart.
Suck it, is what I say.
I'm scared of her.
She's great. She's working on it. Like a lot of people, she's working on a Trump book.
I think her and Frances McDormand should mate, and then we take their children and invade Australia with a super army of the McDormand Habermans. Seriously.
I'm going to bring that up with
him. That is like bad and ass come together.
I know,
oh, my
true.
God.
It's fair. It's a fair situation.
Jeez.
So speaking of which, one of the things I was trying to get information out of her, which she didn't. She's like a clam. She doesn't give information. She only just reports it. And I'm like, give me the inside scoop, the skinny. Republican leaders in Congress have voted to oust Wyoming Republican Representative Liz Cheney for her vote to impeach former President Donald Trump for his involvement in inciting the Capitol insurrection and our continued focus on it. So how does, I want to talk about branding, because this is a bad branding situation. I want to know how you would tell the GOP to rebrand itself here. And how would you advise Liz Cheney to do?
The GOP is a much more difficult one. Let me start with Liz Cheney, or Representative Cheney. When you think about heroes throughout history, whether it's Abraham Lincoln, whether it's Mahatma Gandhi, whether it's, I think one of the greatest American heroes is Muhammad Ali. The thing that makes them heroes is that they take a stand at extreme cost to their personal well-being, economic livelihood, political futures, at a moment in time when it is really hard to do that. And then in retrospect, we look back and say, you know what Ali refused to do in terms of signing up to be kind of a poster child for the Vietnam War, stripped of his medals.
Yep.
They impoverished him. He had to borrow money from Joe Frazier. And then who do we ask just 24 years later to light the flame at the Atlanta Olympics? We asked Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And this
so essentially,
is,
Liz Cheney's going to be lighting the flame at the Olympics in 2040 or whatever.
Look, I believe, and I get politics wrong a lot. Hold on a second. Okay. I think Liz Cheney is now the front runner for the Republican nomination in 2024.
To shake out of you. Here's the thing. She voted with Trump 99% of the time. And the person who's replacing her didn't. And used to be quite a moderate and now is just mouthing these ridiculous bullshit about the election being stolen. Well, it's interesting. Why is she doing this? I was talking to my mom this morning, of course, because she watches Fox News at home. She's like, she needed to shut up. I'm like, but she's pointing, like literally, it's like whatever the talking point is of Fox News, within a week, my mother parrots it because it's really fascinating to watch that. And she used to be like not like this. It's really fascinating. But, you know, it's fascinating that there's a lot of women after Donald Trump. The women are the ones that are saying, whether it's Liz Cheney or Elizabeth Warren, whether it's Maggie Haberman, who's, you know, gotten a lot of crap from Donald Trump, whether it's Hillary Clinton. It's really interesting that none of the others will do this. And this is her. I have to figure out, everyone's like, what's her game? And I don't quite understand it. I think part of it is she actually believes what she's saying. And the other part is she doesn't want the Republican Party to be a Trump party of Trump.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's simpler than that. I think there's never the wrong time to do the right thing. She's more powerful than the two senators in Wyoming because there's no one there. There's only one representative and the last name is Cheney. And she is being advised.
Yeah,
she is being advised. The person whispering into her ear is arguably the brightest political mind of the last century. And that is the guy that convinced the New York Times to endorse the geopolitical catastrophic decision of the last 50 years. And that was us going into Iraq under false pretense. And that man is Dick Cheney. Yeah. She is fucking playing chess, and shithead McCarthy and his band of lame insurrectionists are playing checkers.
Yeah.
She is betting, and this is a good bet, that the guy who lost all three houses of government, that the guy has every AG after him in the world, that the guy, when the next election comes around, is going to be an obese 78-year-old man who's going to be utterly distracted with his own legal woes, that his currency is going to go down, and into that void will be the people who had SAC and said, I am standing up for the Constitution and Republican values. This is, I mean, she literally is now jumped
she's
out ahead of my view.
She's appealing to the middle now. She really is appealing to independents. She's appealing. Although, look at what Lindsey Graham said. This is a real branding exercise because Lindsey Graham says they can't win without...
They can't win right now.
Right.
It's going to change.
Yeah.
It's a bet on the future. It's a bet on the rising or falling stock of Donald Trump. And the reality is right now, Liz Cheney is shot out ahead of DeSantis and Nikki Haley is the front runner because you know what? She's right. She's right. And every day she's going to get more and more right. And we're going to look back and say, who did the right thing? Gave up her gold medals and her economic livelihood to do the right thing. Those are our heroes.
She may lose in Wyoming. I don't think she cares. I think
she's
going to go to every person in Wyoming and explain her decision to them. That's powerful, I think.
That'll take 3-4 days. But, well, there's Bob over
here. You know what?
She
doesn't mind. This woman doesn't mind throwing down. I got issues with Liz Cheney, let me just say. I think what she did to her sister was appalling. But, you know, look, my mother was terrible.
Yeah, but it gives her more cred. She's a true conservative.
She really is. Like, that's, like, I'm not, actually, you know what? I'm not going to give her a hard time because my own mother did that. So, you know, I see it. I've seen it.
You mean a hard time of being a bigot to a family member?
Being gay. No. But let me just say, this is a fascinating moment for branding, and the GOP brand is really it'll be interesting to see what happens with this brand.
Yeah, but here's
going
the thing.
All Marjorie Taylor Greene and not Liz Cheney.
Who's going to help the GOP out of what seems like an irreparable brand issue? The Democrats. We're just outstanding at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. We're going to have AOC insult Andrew Yang for doing something that involves Ramadan because he said something supportive of Israel, and we're going to create interesting warfare.
Yeah. I think the Democrats have been
doing
pretty
after
good.
Each other.
I think they've been pretty good stepping out of the way.
Give us time.
I know, but
give
I'm just
us
saying,
time.
I feel like Biden's been like, I'm just sitting over here doing things. Like, go with
He's doing great.
It's interesting. Although my mother said there's a shadow presidency going on, in case you're interested. That's what's going on over at
Who's
Fox News.
Who's the shadow?
Susan Rice. Not Kamala, Susan Rice.
Really?
She's not the shadow. She's not the shadow. Whatever. Anyway, another area that's interesting. From? Speaking of controversial statements, your friend WeWork CEO Sandeep Mathrani said those employees who are uberly engaged in the company want to go to the office 2/3 of the time at least. Those who are least engaged are very comfortable working from home. This was an interesting statement. Of course, the guy who read it, he got killed on Twitter. He kind of opened himself up. This is a Wall Street Journal article that he was in. What do you think about that? I think he's probably there's going to be an interesting back to work, not to work. There's all kinds of controversies. A woman who ran the Washingtonian got everyone pissed saying get back to work or get in line or get out of line. What do we think about this? I think it's still going to be a hybrid situation, but what do you think, Scott?
So disclosure, I'm not friends with Sandeep, but I have done some work with him, and I think he is one of the brightest minds in real estate. I thought he was a genius choice for WeWork. I texted Sandeep last night and I said, you missed this. You got it wrong here because what you fail to realize here is that, and what you're going to get attacked for is conflating engagement with a lack of encumbrance. And that is a woman at home taking care of a kid because their school is doing remote work, which is Latin for, hey, moms, you're now in charge of educating your kid. And let's be honest, it's always the mom.
It is.
And there are some people who really need that flexibility. And the reality is the people who want to get back to work are what I found. Is mostly young people who want to get out of their shitty little apartments, want to meet friends, mentors, want to work hard, they want to be part of that social. But to conflate engagement with your ability to get into work is just a very tone-deaf statement. And the worst thing about
especially
it—
Especially when you're selling office space, but go ahead.
Well, and I said this to Sandeep, this is a brand issue, and that is you want to ladder the person— Right now, he wants to be the really sober, thoughtful, mature CEO. He wants to be the immunity to the megalomania bullshit that was Adam Neumann. And here's the thing. Sandeep has a great story. What is Office Space going to need to be post-pandemic?
You're right. You have said
post-pandemic.
This is why I brought this up.
What are you going to need? What do tenants want right now? They're going to want flexibility. They don't know how much office space they're going to need. What are they going to want when people do come back into the office? They're going to want something really nice and communal that facilitates interactions. What else are they going to want?
We need a WeWork.
Flexibility.
Can we get a little tiny WeWork office and just lock ourselves in there?
Their competition has been cleared out. People want to focus on their core business, not real estate.
You're right.
WeWork has a fantastic
story. It was
story.
A careless thing, he said. He should think hard.
You know what? Sandeep is one of those guys that is like 98% of the time so right that I think he was poorly advised here. I would go to, I think his head of communications, his head of comms or whoever plays this story should be just taken out to the backyard. This was a really tone deaf thing to say from a guy who is literally, he's one of the three, him, Hamid Moghadam, and I'm sure I'll come up with a third, maybe Sam Zell, are the biggest brains in real estate. Mm. He got this one wrong. But anyways, as you know, I'm bullish on WeWork.
Listen, people who work from home, so I have worked from home for 20 years. I hate the office. I've always hated the office. I think I'm more productive than most people. Same for you. You produce from everywhere.
You know what? I got this wrong. I used to tell people in my company, you have to come into work. And occasionally I would let, especially working mothers or people taking care of their parents, sure, you can work from home one or two days a week. But I've always been one of those people that we need to bump off of each other. We need to be in the office. I used to have, talk about unpopular, I used to have 8 a.m. Monday morning meetings for the entire firm. In New York, and New York is not a morning place, and people hated me for it.
Yeah.
And I hired a CEO, and the first thing he did,
even later,
the first thing the CEO did was cancel those 8 a.m. Monday morning meetings.
Well, it's just like ridiculous. I think that you should be intentionally bring people together. I think there's some really important things that people should do together as a group. Walt and I used to throw parties and take people to do cool things. That's what we used to do. Not just dumb trips, but really, we did stuff as a group that was very, not like falling exercises or things like that. But we thought about that a lot in terms of how people came in. There is a benefit for people going in and people, because it engages people with each other and creates relationships. But you could be very, this could be a really good time for companies. Lastly, Amazon won its appeal in the European Union over $300 million tax bill from 2017. The court ruled that EU regulators had failed to prove the company got a legal advantage from tax rulings. Big blow to Marguerite Vestager, the head of the European Commission on this issue. She's been trying to use money and taxes to hold these companies accountable. But this is a legal fight, obviously.
Whatever. She's fearless. She has great hair and she knits. She's a gangster. She'll be back.
Yeah, not the last of her. This is a ground war with these companies.
Yeah, this is, like you said, this is literally one battle in a long war. And the reality is we all focus on the tax rates of corporations. It has nothing to do. Tax rates are almost unimportant. It's all about tax code. Amazon is registered. $10 billion. No, $10 billion in profits over the last, I'm sorry, $20 billion in profits over the last 10 years. It's either 20 or $10 billion, and their tax rate has been 4.5%. And I think people are just fed up, and they go, if the most profitable, most successful companies in the world are paying, and 90 of the 90 of the Fortune 500 paid zero tax, including FedEx and Nike. And it's like, well, if our most successful profitable companies aren't paying any tax, who is? And the answer is small and medium-sized businesses that don't have representation in Washington, can't afford 400 tax accountants to navigate this tax code. So I think people are really fed up.
I think it's a good topic for Democrats and Republicans. And
well, one of the biggest tax cuts we could have in our society or unlocks would just be simplicity. And that is to say, okay, here's the tax rate and everybody pays it. Mm. And it would be
complex than just that because it has impacts. I'm not an expert, but I've heard people say this and then I've heard very good arguments that it has to be a little more complex. But go ahead. Sorry.
Well, what would be complex about 0% income tax up to $50,000, 50 to 520, and then anything over 20, 40%, and you're done. No tax deduction. All tax deductions are just a maze such that only wealthy people can get through it.
It's also a pain in the ass for people with money.
And you want to talk about an unlock? The brightest, not other than you, the brightest person I work with is a woman who works at a law firm who helps with my tax planning. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, you should be solving world hunger or building the next app. Instead, she's helping.
Such that Mamie, she's the best. She's smart as can be.
It's such an incredible waste of human capital.
I shall tell her that.
It's true. We've invented incredible professionals to solve problems of our own making. And complexity is nothing but a tax on the poor because they don't have, if you know how to navigate by stars, you want to have boat races at night. And the rich have figured out a way to have all boat economic races at night where poor people who don't have the GPS to navigate this tax code get screwed. Simplicity of our tax code.
That was a metaphor I wasn't expecting.
There you go.
At night.
Yo ho, yo ho.
That's a very elite argument. Us with yachts. Those who don't have super yachts.
Super yacht.
You would like a super yacht. We've discussed this. Neither of us are getting a super yacht, no matter how rich we get.
I'm not good on boats.
All right. We're going to go to the big story. Speaking of super yachts require a lot of gas, we're going to the big story. Let's talk about updates on the Colonial Pipeline cyber attacks. A major East Coast pipeline for jet fuel and natural gas is back online after 6-day shutdown caused by a ransomware cyber attack, but it'll still take some time before it's fully operational. But the shutdown has already sparked panic buying and hoarding that has overwhelmed gas stations in the Southeast. So there's a picture of a woman putting gas in a plastic bag, which was a delightful video to see. Gas prices have soared above $3 because of the shortage. This attack follows a string of other ransomware attacks, which you and I have talked about, including SolarWinds. That wasn't ransomware, but and Microsoft Exchange Server. These were other attacks, not necessarily ransomware attacks. But there's a lot of attacks going on, and ransomware is among the many. They both were tied to nation-state actors. The most recent attack seems to be a criminal group, as Nicole Perlroth said to us. There's all kinds of reasons for doing it, whether it's to make money, whether it's to create discord, whether it's a nation trying to do other things. So what do you make of this? And it's affected, people just immediately moved into the, I'm going to grab all the toilet paper mode like they did in the pandemic, which of course you didn't need to do and created really problematic situations.
I think this is really one of the existential threats to our Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. And could pretty easily escalate to something very frightening. And what struck me was the people responsible for this, they have a name, supposedly they're out of Russia, apologized and said that they're going to pull back. Mm-hmm. They didn't realize the ramifications of what they did. And they're trying to act like they're a nation state.
Yeah, they're
putting out diplomatic statements. And if I were Biden, I would have said, you know what, thanks for that. We're going to drone your ass.
Yeah.
I mean, this has to be... We have to punch back here. And if, in fact, our suspicions are correct and that it's nation states using some of these groups to fight a proxy war and create discord, I think we need a cold war. And that is, we have to hit back pretty hard and come to some sort of detente where, when these attacks happen, we're holding you responsible and we're going to do our best to respond thoughtfully, meticulously, and 2 to 5x the damage.
Yeah.
Because at some point, you're going to see a hospital system lose power.
Oh, they're doing that. They're attacking hospital. That's what Nicole talked about. Hospital systems, all kinds of, there's a lot of very vulnerable high surface areas that they need to, like, they have held, hospitals has been among the biggest attacks from ransomware people who are doing this.
But this is going to be, as we talked about last week, I think this is going to be the Achilles heel or the entry point into where crypto gets regulated. Mm-hmm. Because this is what people demand. But this is really, this is frightening. I think all of us know, you know, I've been hacked a couple times in the email where people do phishing, co-op someone's email, and then send a message to our CFO saying pretending to be the CEO, say, send $22,000, yeah, or they're going to shut our service down.
I just got one while we were sitting here, a Bank of America card.
But the really scary stuff is the state-sponsored stuff where they're just really trying to wreak havoc. I mean, there's just no getting around it. It's a form of terrorism.
It is. And it can be economic. It can be for other reasons. There was attacks on water systems. See, this combines ransomware with infrastructure attacks. And I think Nicole was more concerned about that. And she felt like the Chinese and Russians are very deep within our infrastructure systems. And a lot of them are state and local. So they're, you know, we have a high surface area of attack in this country in terms of what you could do. And this is just one example of many, many, many systems that are interconnected and affect lots of people. And then, of course, people, because they're people, respond in the incorrect way, start hoarding and doing stuff like that. It wreaks havoc around these things. I think it was George Conway, put up a picture of his, he was plugging in his electric car. I know you have an electric car too. And he said, I'm hoarding electrons. which was, I think a lot of people who have electric cars did a little lap around the block about that. And it gives you thinks about it. We need to move into something where we're not dependent on pipelines and things like that. Obviously, that's a bigger issue. But these systems need to be girded in ways that they have never been, and they're so vulnerable.
But look what we had. It's sort of the perfect storm of bad things. One, in America, as citizens, we have failed to acknowledge, we bought into this screed from Reagan, the government is not important and it's a tax and is full of bureaucrats and stupid people. And the reality is no private firm is going to have the incentive to make the requisite investments in protecting our infrastructure unless we think long term and we stop neutering and diminishing the importance of government. Two, we've had literally incompetence running the government up until about 3 months ago. That takes a toll. And then you have what I'll call a democratization of technology, where we didn't have a monopoly on it, but we had a near monopoly on it for a long time. And now, you know, the Chinese and the Russians and these they have their own tech now.
Well, and a lot of it from us. You know, I mean, that's what Nicole's book was about, is these marketplaces that now exist, these dark marketplaces where people can do all kinds, all method of cyber attack. They take so many different ways. And I think it's truly, we are so vulnerable the cyber attack in ways that I think we haven't even begun to understand in the way we're, and as we add more things to jack ourselves into the system, it really, one of the things Colonial Pipeline is advertising a manager of cybersecurity. I can't believe they didn't have one. It's sort of like, what? Like you don't have that person working for you?
All right. But that's where I go. The other place I go is, and that is, I get a lot of questions from younger people on where, you know, what are the opportunities in terms of sectors and career. If I were, say, 24 or, you know, 34, and I didn't have a college degree, and I wanted to go for a certification that would give me a great on-ramp into a good career, absolutely cybersecurity.
Cybersecurity, agreed.
And it's exciting for young people because that is the kind of thing where if you get into a decent program, and there's a lot of them that aren't that expensive, and get some sort of certification over 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, you
like
can get
plumbers.
A really good job.
Like plumbers.
Yeah, a lot of people. But yeah, I don't know.
Could
agreed.
Be. Why
vocational.
Not? It can be.
No, I have nothing. You can't. First off, it's really interesting. I just built a house, mm-hmm. and slowly but surely, no domestic workers will do any job that's outdoors. And the only thing they'll do now is be an electrician or plumbers. And supposedly now they can't find plumbers. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think there needs to be tremendous vocational training. But for people who don't want to work with their hands or don't want to be in what I'll call vocational work, I think cybersecurity is going to be a fantastic place to develop skills.
Smart idea. Anyway, this is just very clear. This is going to happen over and over again.
Well, you don't need a college degree necessarily.
Yeah, this is going to happen over and over again. Let's just be clear. Read Nicole Perlroth's book. You'll be terrified. Her book is called This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends. Okay. All right, Scott, time for a quick break. We'll be right back talking about Tesla moving away from Bitcoin and a listener mail question.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from Atlassian.
The universal truth with our customers is they're all struggling to get stuff done. Our goal is how do we help them unleash the potential of their people, their teams, and their technology to actually get the right things done at the right time with the right people the right way. And when we do that, magical things truly happen.
Dom Price is Atlassian's work futurist. It's his job to help Atlassian customers imagine more effective ways to work.
It's completely natural to focus on what you can control in your team. The problem is if that's all you do, you get pretty myopic. The best teams I'm working with, they really work on who are the people upstream and downstream that we need to work with. How do we get flow across the organization? How do we get value into the hands of our customers quickly?
And sometimes achieving flow means that instead of asking who do I work for, it's asking who do I work with.
When you get team connection right, everyone benefits, the employee, the employer, and the customer, right? To get stuff done, the best organizations and teams right now are focusing on modern work. They're dreaming about the future, but they're dreaming about it by planting the seed to get the right things done right now.
Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom enable teams to work effectively together to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Learn more at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com.
Support for Pivot comes from Pendo. Think about some experiences you've had where your review was nice enough. That restaurant down the street you heard was great, nice enough. That boutique hotel you were so excited to try, oh, nice enough, I guess. Not exactly ringing endorsements. And these days, if your brand's app experience is just nice enough, chances are you won't be keeping your users engaged the way you want to. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo can also help you get answers to critical questions about how users are engaging with your app, then turn those insights into action, all in one easy-to-use platform. Visit pendo.io/pivot to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/pivot to learn more.
Okay, Scott, we're back. Tesla CEO / SNL host Elon Musk announced that his company would no longer be accepting Bitcoin as a payment for vehicles for the time being due to environmental concerns. It's not clear why he wasn't concerned before when it was very well known. Following his announcement, as much as $365.85 billion was wiped off the entire cryptocurrency market, although there's been some bounce back already. In his announcement on Twitter, Musk was citing concerns over Bitcoin mining's environment impact and fossil fuels burned into the mining of cryptocurrency. He did add the company tends to start using Bitcoin for transactions again as soon as mining is made more sustainable, and that he'd be looking toward other cryptocurrencies. Of course, they announced back in February that it purchased $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin. Fascinating. Scott, please just go on.
Well, okay, so...
This is an issue. I've talked about this, by the way, with people and everything else, but go ahead.
So let's acknowledge there are environmental issues, and there's a really interesting discussion, a worthwhile discussion around the electricity consumption of mining for crypto. But they didn't seem to want to have that conversation in February. These issues were present in February when they purchased $1.5 billion and then put in his profile the term Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And then before the earnings,
Go ahead.
When they were going to miss earnings, decided to sell some of those gains that he had catalyzed by being a big promoter of Bitcoin, beat his earnings, and now all of a sudden, after selling and showing a $100 million plus profit, he's decided that he's uncomfortable with the environmental impact of Bitcoin. And what you have here, I think this is a big deal, because this is an individual who 18 months ago put out a tweet that said, I have funding secured to take the company private at $420 a share, and the stock shot up. It ended up, there was no truth to that. That is probably the most textbook case of market manipulation I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The SEC decided it's important that we have innovators. He's creating a lot of value. He's doing important work. Let's slap him on the wrist with a $10 million fine and hope that it doesn't happen again. Well, guess what? He is now saying, to the moon with Dogecoin, and then on SNL saying it's a hustle and it loses a third of its value, and then saying, putting Bitcoin in his profile and Bitcoin shoots up, and then saying, I'm uncomfortable, and then putting out thoughtful statements after he sells it, saying, I'm worried about the environment. You are now talking about thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people who are losing sleep at night wondering what the fuck is this guy going to tweet in the morning?
Yeah, the thing is, this is interesting. Dieter Bohn from Verge said, are crypto markets too prone to massive multi-billion dollar swings in value based on seemingly tiny pressures, or is Elon Musk too influential on those markets? Yes. I think that's
100%.
Right. Another one, someone wrote, good morning to everyone except Elon Musk. Which I thought was funny. But there's all kinds of reaction. It's another person's Elon Musk comment about Bitcoin is like saying a Tesla uses way too much energy rather than just ride a donkey instead. People are losing their beloved minds, but they hung on his every word on the way up. You know what I mean? Which is, I think, sort of like too bad, boys. You know, you were thrilled when you were like going, go Elon. And then he does this. You shouldn't rely on him, and it shouldn't have this much thing, because it begins to look like a sort of this pump and dump thing, which I think is what you're essentially saying.
But it's an interesting point. Everyone loves a market manipulator as long as they're manipulating the markets to your advantage. And market manipulation, according to the SEC, the language is really vague. But in essence, it's when you put out information or take actions that have nothing to do with the fundamentals, such that you can either pump and dump, or they call it poop and scoop, right? Talk a stock down so you can swoop in and buy
it. Poop and scoop? Is that a
poop
technical
term? Poop and scoop. It's the opposite of pump and dump.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, if it comes out that he has purchased Bitcoin after this thing dropped, I believe at the SEC right now, I think their heads exploded when they saw that statement. And you know what this is a failure of? I think when you tell innovators or Jesus Christ, they're inclined to believe you.
You've
this
said
is a
that,
real
yes.
failure. This is a real failure of the fiduciaries. It's an incredible failure of his board of directors. It is clear his board of directors. Remember, do you remember like
they
in
don't
the 70s?
Care. They don't. Trust me, I know them. They don't care.
That's my point. But do you remember in the 70s, they had like the world's greatest athlete, and they used to go, okay, the LA Dodgers versus the New York Yankees, and they'd all do like tug of war and sprints. They should have the world contest of who are bigger bitches, the directors from Facebook or the directors at Tesla. They let their CEOs show such a lack of regard for other stakeholders. And literally Elon Musk is brilliant. He could put someone on Mars.
Yeah.
He could electrify the world and catalyze a real dent in a climate change or emissions. And instead, you know what? He might get taken down by this at a minimum.
Yeah.
At a minimum, this is going to be a big distraction, because he keeps going up to the SEC, Kara, and waving his middle finger in their face.
He does indeed. So interesting, he put up tweet he did was Tesla and Bitcoin. And he goes, energy usage trend over the past few months is insane. And then he put another chart in about Bitcoin. And then he did a poll, do you want Tesla to accept Doge? 78% said yes, versus 22% who said no. And they had 4 million responses, which was interesting. I think it's just this idea of relying on a single person is really problematic. Let's be clear.
You're exactly right. But one of the fundamental components of healthy markets is no one individual or organization has too much influence.
Yeah.
You know, the markets are meant to be 1,000 points of light that spit back an amalgam of all of our emotions. And anyone who tries to control the market to gain their own power usually gets hurt, whether it's the Hunt brothers in steel or, I'm sorry, in the silver market. And we have an individual now basically moving markets by $10 or $20 billion in directions that tend to benefit him. This is, I'm telling you, the SEC right now, there are a bunch of SEC officials and lawyers in a room right now going, okay, we probably have to do something here.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting situation because they really haven't been regulating this in any way. It'll be fascinating. I think what's good about it, here's what's good about it. People are talking about this energy thing. Now, of course, there's all these people arguing that there is no energy problem here. There is an energy problem. And now they're like screaming at each other on Twitter over what the problem is and that it's a fake story and on and on and on. I think it's complicated. And you know, guess what? Cryptocurrency, welcome to the real world. And this is how it works. And so the influence of Elon on this stuff is far too vast. That when you saw that number dip, like it was, even when he said the hustle thing with Dogecoin, it was, I just feel like they love him on the way up, hate him on the way down. And something, one, it means that one person, it's just like the decision of getting Trump off of these platforms. As much as I like the decision, two people decided. Right? In the whole planet of Earth, like who's, whether the president's going to be able to say something. It was the right decision, but just two people were involved. And well, in this case, one person involved.
You're exactly right. This is where we are. We have someone manipulating financial markets who happens to be the CEO of Tesla, an innovator. You know who's saving us from arguably the biggest menace in the world right now, Mark Zuckerberg? Hmm. Not our legislators, not attorney generals. The person saving us is Tim Cook. And by the way, I cannot tell you how happy I am around that one piece of data that came out two days ago.
Yeah.
That when consumers are presented with the choice to opt in to Facebook's apps,
they don't.
Which includes tracking, Facebook having the ability to track them on other apps, a whopping 6% are opting in. And Facebook, who's 900-person comms person, the way they respond is to tell Zuckerberg to go on and say, you know, this is awful. People don't want to pay $1,200 for a phone, and it's very cynical. But here's the thing. When I walk into an Apple store, they give me the choice to spend $1,200 on a phone. And like most legislative action, whether it's the DOJ, it's not the actual action, it's the scrutiny. And I think the majority of America didn't realize that when they're on the Facebook app, when they leave the app, they're still being tracked by surveillance capitalists called Facebook. And 94% of iOS users with this new update are saying, you know what? Yeah. I am not down with that.
Yeah.
This is so wonderful. You know what they are? They're fucked. The people who decided, hold on. Give me some running room here.
Is that a technical
term? Hold on here. The people who decided, you know what? The key steps to tyranny are to weaponize the media, then the economy, and then the military. We've weaponized media. Let's go after the economy with Diem and Libra. Guess what, guys? You're fucked. The individual who in a meeting told Mark Zuckerberg that Instagram for kids was a good idea, you're fucked. The photojournalist that will accompany Sheryl Sandberg in her Domain Ott meets World Economic Forum trips and photo diary, all of it. Guess what? You're fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, this company, finally, I have been waiting for this.
We'll see.
I am woman. Hear me roar.
Empire
this
always
is such
strikes
good news.
By the way, Apple made a really stupid move this week. They hired an ex-Facebook executive named Antonio Garcia Martinez, who's a lot.
Awesome
he wrote
name.
A book called Chaos Monkeys. I've had him on my shows a couple times. I did when he came out.
I like that book.
Well, except for some of it had some really awful comments in it. And so Apple hired him and then just now apparently is not hiring Adam. He's quite, I was surprised that they apparently didn't know what was in the book. And, you know, look, if you like the book, you like the book, but Apple should have read it before they hired him just so they could deal with it. And
I remember reading the book and thinking it was funny.
Let me read a section. Most women in the Bay Area are soft and weak, cosseted and naive despite their claims of worldliness and generally full of shit.
I'm sorry, said that about most women in the Bay Area?
Yeah, this is Antonio.
Oh, that's not good.
This is Antonio. Let me just say, go listen to my podcast.
If he had just taken the word women out, he would have been right.
Right, okay. They have their self-regarding entitlement feminism and ceaselessly vaunted their independence, but the reality is, come the epidemic plague or foreign invasion, they become precisely the sort of useless baggage you'd trade for a box of shotgun shells or a jerry can of diesel.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. He's a lot.
Wait,
he's
is
a
this
lot.
The one where he says, Enter into the Chaos Monkey Cage of Entrepreneurship. Is that the one?
I don't remember. Anyway, Apple said,
rough.
At Apple, we've always strived to create an inclusive, welcoming workplace where everyone is respected and accepted. Behavior that demeans or discriminates against people who they are is no place here. I just am like, did you not read? I literally had him on the podcast. People have written about this.
That's bad.
He's an interesting character. He also has written appalling and horrible things, and they should
What's
have read
he doing
it and
at
made
Apple?
A decision. He was going to work in the App Store and App News advertising team.
And have they already backtracked and not rescinded the offer?
According to 9 to 5 Mac, yes. They hired him on Monday.
To be clear, I think there's a lot of very talented people at Facebook that should go on to have outstanding careers at other firms.
Yeah, yeah. I just can't. I think this is an Apple fight. It isn't. Look, he is what he is, and they shouldn't have done that like this. He'll, of course, become a cancel culture warrior now, an anti-cancel culture. But he already was.
He is still in that statement. That's pretty rough. It's not really rough. It's pretty stupid.
The book is full of it. Full of it. He and I had this most testy of interviews, although he's quite brilliant in many ways,
I'm
too.
I'm turning you in for shells, all right? Shells?
Jerry, I would sell you for a jerry can of diesel, my friend. I'm sorry if I had to.
I get it.
I would take down Scott Galloway. I would for a Snickers bar. If we were in a situation and I needed a Snickers bar, you would
get it. It is a great snack.
Ladies, here he is. He's yours. Or men or whatever. I would sell you to anybody for a Snickers bar. That's what would happen. So just so you know. Anyway.
Twitter, just so we're clear, Twitter knows you love the dog. Twitter knows
and
you
I
love
would
the
sell
dog.
You
whenever
for
you
a
say
Snickers
that,
bar.
Whenever you say that, everyone's like, that's just not true.
I wouldn't sell you for a payday, but I'd sell you for a Snickers bar. Anyway,
remember that?
Okay, Scott, let's move on to listener mail. Roll the tape.
You got.
I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You got mail.
Hey, Karen, Scott. It's Matthew here from Melbourne. The question I have is around the humanitarian crisis, which is unfolding in India right now. Right now, I haven't seen that much commentary around the impact that it's going to have on India's ICT industry, given that it actually runs the back office for a lot of large organizations in the world, such as Goldman Sachs and Standard Chartered. I was wondering what your thoughts would be. Cheers. Bye.
Cheers. I love Melbourne. It's one of my favorite
cities. Melbourne, the tagline, San Francisco, but less shitty.
Yes, it's such a great city.
It is a great city.
It is. It looks like San Francisco.
It feels very San Francisco-y.
It is. It's a lovely city. I've had such a nice time there with my sons. So this is interesting. This is an important thing. India is a critical part of the technology stack of our world and everything else. Mm-hmm. And not just back office. They do a lot of innovations. India is not just the back office of the rest of technology, although there's a lot of that. But it does do that. And so it is interesting to wonder what is going to be the effect. I haven't seen much coverage of this. The same thing with Tel Aviv and tech as the war escalates in Palestine and Israel. These are major tech centers for a global, global system, India particularly. It'll be interesting to see what happens. It happened when China, at the beginning of the pandemic. We are so globally interconnected from a tech point of view. It's a good question, Scott.
I think there's just an enormous opportunity. I think one of the most visionary moves of the 20th century, and we don't recognize or acknowledge how much peace and prosperity it has kept and catalyzed, was that we made this visionary, generous, bold investment in our enemies, and that is we borrowed money and rebuilt Japan and Germany. And I think there's a geopolitical move here.
Unprecedented
opportunity. India is about to become the swing vote for the world economically. Politically, it's an incredible nation, more PhDs than any other nation in the world, English-speaking. It is a democracy. I love the way you put it. That's an important part of the tech stack. I'm going to use that. I think that's a brilliant way to summarize how important India has become. I think we are now starting to play offense. We had the lowest infection rates in the last year yesterday, which is
amazing.
This is just wonderful food, wonderful news. I think an incredible opportunity for us. We have been playing defense for the last 4 years because of all these self-inflicted wounds would be for us to say, we are going to go on the offense here, and we're going to use our incredible supply chain, our innovation, and our generosity, and we are going to storm the shores of India with Americans and with vaccine. And then if they want it, we're going to do the same thing in Brazil. These are the two nations that right now are incurring the most death, disease, and disabilities. They think there's literally probably millions of infections every day, and they think at some point there might be 100,000 plus deaths a day in India.
And
this would be an opportunity
to
for
collapse.
us to do the right thing, marshal our resources, marshal our courage.
By the way, everyone's affected there, the entire society. And then it has iterations all around the world. It's in our self-interest to do so.
100%, but it's an
opportunity. Modi, is he was so powerful. He looks like this.
Yeah, he looks terrible now.
He's hiding. We're trying to figure out how to do something here. But, you know, the guy who does the vaccine, I think it's called the Serum Institute there, is sort of escaped to India, to London. The CEO and is saying, oh, I'm coming back, but you know, he's under a lot of pressure. He was supposed to be rolling out this vaccine, but they were just woefully underprepared here in terms of things. And even in this country, even though we still have issues, it's getting better and better and better in lots of states. It's really, it is an opportunity for us. It's an opportunity, especially India, which is a critical country to the world economics, and especially in tech. There's four countries that are the sort of the linchpins of this, and it's the U.S., obviously, China, India, and Israel. And so we have to think really hard about this. I'm not even going to start going down the Israel-Palestine road. That's a very different situation. But here we can actually affect change in a really meaningful way. I think you're right.
Look, we saved so tremendous courage and bravery and resources and you know, just brilliance, logistical brilliance when we stormed the shores of Normandy. Mm-hmm. We should storm the shores of India and Brazil right now with vaccine and volunteers and healthcare professionals and capital and create and really strengthen and cement those alliances in Latin America and in the Near East. This is a huge opportunity for us to do the right thing, but also to do the smart thing in terms of cementing alliances. I think it's a huge opportunity for us. We're really in a position now, and this is incredibly exciting news, to get off our heels and onto our toes and join hands with other people across the world and do what we do because we are Americans.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really important. Okay, one more quick break and we'll be back for predictions. I want a good prediction, Scott. I really want a good prediction from you.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Wow, that guy means business.
Just an amazing player.
No, not him, the sports photographer behind him.
What?
He has a business bank account with QuickBooks Money where he earns 5% annual percentage yield, so he's scoring big on and off the field. You might even say he's the MVB.
MVB?
The most valuable business.
Making your money work harder. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Okay, we're back for predictions. The weekend is upon us. Prediction for the days and weeks ahead. Before you start, I would like to offer our condolences to Senator Amy Klobuchar, who was recently on the show. Her father died yesterday, and she had a great statement about him. He was actually a journalist, and he had Alzheimer's. It was after a long struggle with Alzheimer's that he died. And she said, even to the end, as he lived the final chapter of his life with Alzheimer's, he was still singing songs and telling incredible stories to my sister Megan and me. Klobuchar said he loved our state, he loved journalism, he loved sports and adventure, and we loved him.